former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're locked and loaded for hour two of this Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. Had some breaking news a few moments ago from ESPN's Adam Schefter. Unfortunately, the meniscus surgery for Vikings rookie quarterback J.J. McCarthy did ultimately have to be a full repair, and his rookie season is over before it begins. Had a great preseason debut, got people really excited about what the potential of the future would be, Michael, but unfortunately, year one, he will not have the opportunity to hit the field in the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, this is heartbreaking. Certainly, I'm sure he's disappointed, but at the end of the day, you know, he wasn't charted to start this year. They were definitely going to go with Sam Darnold. And look, when you examine what Sam Darnold's done over the last 16 games, because that's what he's played in 2 years, 16 games. He played six games with Carolina, and he was involved with 10 games. Now, he didn't throw a lot of passes. We understand that. Only four interceptions. I mean, he's been having double-digit interceptions every year of his career. So he's cut down on that, which is critical. And I think he's got a better sense of rhythm. And I think he's got more confidence at 26. He's only 27 years old. So, look, I'm not saying Sam Darnold's going to be their answer, but there's a reason Sam Darnold was the third pick overall in the draft. There's a reason why Sam Darnold was highly thought of coming out. Now, he throws too many bad balls. He doesn't really protect the football enough. But I think with Kevin O'Connell coaching him and with Aaron Jones in the backfield, I think they can still be effective this season.
Yeah, that seeing ghost narrative has certainly followed Sam Darnold throughout his career. But I think as far as being a quarterback in a situation with great coaching and talent around you, he could be set up for success if he's able to do the little things right here. Kevin O'Connell, head coach of the Vikings, yesterday when he did announce that J.J. McCarthy was going to need surgery on his meniscus, didn't know the extent of it at that time, was asked about Sam Darnold and how he is developing so far. Take a listen.
You know, Sam's had a really good camp, and my confidence level in Sam is very, very high at this point, and looking forward to seeing him continue his progression that we've had for him throughout the early part of camp into that first preseason game. Now we'll have a couple days of work with the Browns. And then obviously as we roll through the rest of these preseason games and more practices to kind of complete the training camp process here before we move into the regular season, I'm really looking forward to Sam's continued growth, success in the offense. And I know his teammates and the rest of the coaching staff have been really enthused by what Sam's done. My confidence level is really high in Sam.
That's good to hear if you're a Vikings fan, confidence level in Sam Darnold.
I think it's all genuine too. I think sometimes we get so caught up in what a player did working for the Jets. And, you know, he won seven games in 1 year, had a 500 record 1 year with the Jets. So I think to me, we let the perceptions run wild, and Kevin should just take it as, look, Sam's got talent. You know, he was playing better at Carolina, didn't have a chance. He got hurt. You know, he took over from Baker Mayfield and then got hurt. So I think deep down, they just have to keep coaching him, understanding now that he has problems. There's some issues that he's going to always have, but every quarterback has issues. Every quarterback is someone you need to manage.
Season win total for the Minnesota Vikings sitting at 6.5. They're plus 950 long shot in the division, plus 300 to make the postseason this year. Adam Schefter also, by the way, detailed some of the quarterback misfortune for the Vikings over the last 8 years, dating back to 2016 when Teddy Bridgewater had his serious non-contact knee injury before the start of the season. Of course, last year, Kirk Cousins with his ruptured Achilles, and now here with the first round rookie, J.J. McCarthy. But still, high expectations in the future for J.J. when he is healthy. A lot of people very excited about the type of player that he can be as a pro. The Vikings will be on the field this week, as Kevin O'Connell mentioned, against the Browns. They got some joint practices. Cleveland, a 3.5-point week two preseason favorite against Minnesota, 36.5 the total there. We also have an update, no update on Brandon Ayuk. Shocker, Michael, I'm sure. This situation is so interesting to me because initially it was like, in my opinion, at least this offseason, Brandon Ayuk's going to be a 49er this year. He and Deebo Samuel are both going to be on the roster this year. Simple as that. Then it seemed like a week and a half ago, we saw a lot of these heavy developments and trade talks potentially with him and the Patriots, him with the Browns, him now with the Steelers. And it seems that has more legs and a plan is in place there. yet the 49ers haven't agreed to it because Brandon Ayuk is still working on an extension over here. So where do you think we sit? What have you heard about this situation?
My feeling is he's going back to San Francisco, and they've got to iron out a few kinks. I think this is as close as they've been through this saga, and it's annoying as hell. But I don't think the kid ever wanted to leave. I don't, even though he claimed he wanted money, he wouldn't take the $32 million from the Patriots. So, you know, he's got to go with what who wants to pay. And I'm sure they're trying to iron out, and he's trying to get a little bit more in incentives or do something else. But I think, to me, you know, this is where he'll play. They need him. Look, the reason they didn't trade him for anything or draft picks is because they want somebody to come in and help their team this year. Mm-hmm. That's why the Cleveland with Amari Cooper in the deal was more attractive than what the Patriots were offered. That was the best offer on the table because they were getting draft picks and Cooper. So I think, to me, that's what it's about. San Francisco is in win mode now. They have a good team. They need him to win on the outside. There's no question. And he complements their offense perfectly. Now, that being said, that doesn't mean you have to pay him whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. You know, we just don't have a printing press out back.
Well, is Ayuk wants his cake and to eat it too. He wants the money. He wants to stay on the team that's going to win. Well, those things don't usually come hand in hand for you, big guy. That's why the Patriots were offering you all the money in the world that you could ask for, but you're going to go to a team with a predicted win total of 4.5.
And you could add one more thing in there too, Stormy. He doesn't want to play on his fifth-year tender.
Correct.
So you could add that in there. So there's a lot of things he doesn't want. Mm-hmm. You know, he wants this. He wants that. You know, he's got to listen to demands. And people think he has all the leverage. He does have some. But he doesn't have all the leverage. They still have some leverage.
What do you think of this development for another wide receiver seeking a contract extension? Bengals star Ja'Marr Chase. He had been holding in. He was on the sideline. He was around the guys. Yesterday was the first time that he was not seen at practice, which is why that's significant. What's your understanding of the Ja'Marr Chase situation right now?
I think they're trying to get something done with him. I think there's no question they're trying to get something done with him. I think they want to have him. This is not typical for Mike Brown to have, you know, a player who's got a fourth year plus a fifth year plus two more years on franchise numbers to under contract. I mean, the Bengals have his rights for four more years, in essence. Now, what that means, you know, it's going to be expensive. We know he's one of the top players in the league. I think they're trying to get him a roster bonus so that he can feel like he's up to speed. They fully know that he's not going to play on his fifth year option. I mean, they already know that, but they are like the 49ers in this sense. They want to keep their team together this year. And then they want to decide, okay, we're not going to sign Higgins. Let him go. Use Higgins' money to sign Chase, just like the 49ers. Use Debo's money to sign Ayuk.
Yep, because this year is critically important for both of those teams as they try to make a push for a Super Bowl. Ja'Marr Chase, of course, one of the best wide receivers in the National Football League. He's certainly outplayed his contract, wants to be compensated as such. I love this stat about him. One of four players in NFL history with more than 80 receptions and 1,000 yards in each of his first three seasons in the league. Pretty impressive stuff. All right, Michael, it's about that time in the Lombardi line where we need to know what's on Michael's mind today. What's that thing that's been sticking in your head that you can't get out of it?
Well, I think when you read about training camps and you read about the reports, there's always a little bit of a slant, right? Hometown fans are going to be a little bit more lean on the positive. You know, we've had a beat writer for the 49ers come for the Raiders come on and describe a basically a disaster at quarterback and then say, well, they still can win 10 games. Okay. So we know that, but it's universal by everybody that watches practice. It's a disaster. It's pretty much a disaster. And I think yesterday's practice for the Patriots was a disaster. And I think the reason Drake May's not playing a lot, because Drake May's not ready to play. I don't think Drake May's ready. I don't think they want to put Drake May out there. And I agree with this. I'm not being critical here. I don't think they want to put Drake May out there and have him look bad, let him lose his confidence. I think they're trying to manage that as best they can.
So, Michael, if you are in New England right now, you're a part of this organization, you're GM of the Patriots right now, and you have a quarterback that you just drafted, number 3 overall, and it's very clear to you in just this limited time seeing him on the practice field that he's going to be a starter later rather than sooner. How are you feeling?
If I've seen what I've seen, I would be nervous about that we picked the right guy. I would be scared to death. I would be worried about it. And again, everybody calm down. Let's be patient. But I think, to me, you want to see him have some rhythm, some timing. You want to see him get out there and compete. And right now that hasn't been the case. So, you know, I would be nervous if I were the GM. Of course, if I were the GM, Coach Belichick wouldn't be on the sidelines doing TV shows.
It's an excellent point there, Michael. While we're on the Patriots, last minute and a half here before we hit the break, there's also seemingly trade interest for Matthew Judon, who has not been happy with the current state of his contract. What's the latest there?
Well, they should trade Matthew Judon. They should get away from it and take the best pick they can. Now, the decision they have to make is they don't want to add any money to his contract. They rejected his proposal. So what the decision they have to make is whatever they get, is it going to be better than when Judon becomes a compensatory pick? And my sense of it is, yeah. I mean, a good, like to me, if I'm the Chicago Bears and I've got all this money at wide receiver and I got Montez Sweat at one end, if I could get Judon at the other end, I might be pretty good. Yeah. I might be pretty good. So look, everybody needs a rusher. Like not every team's has the market cornered on rushers. And so if I were a team like that, and look, you're going to have to pay Judon. I don't think he wants to be $80 million in 1 year, but I think you're going to have to pay him. It's $6.5 million this year. He's underpaid.
Yep. $6.5 million base salary in the final year of his deal this season. Four-time Pro Bowler wants to get a little bit more. The New England Patriots, by the way, as expected, low expectations. Win total set for 4.5, and there are a lot of people that think they'll be lucky to accomplish that based on what they have seen and heard about the program right now. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, get into a little college football. One of Michael's favorites, Dave Shumate, college football analyst, former college football director of player personnel. He's going to join us, get the lowdown on his thoughts on the AP Top 25 and bets he thinks might be worth a look in 2024. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We are now officially just 10 days away from kickoff of the 2024-25 college football season. We had the AP preseason top 25 get revealed earlier this week, where the Georgia Bulldogs for the second year in a row are your preseason number one. They are also a plus 300 favorite to win the national championship coming up this year. To talk all things college football, we welcome in Dave Shumate, college football analyst, former college football director of player personnel, now contributor for SEC Unfiltered. Has an unbelievably comprehensive college football preview for this season, CFB Focus 2024. Dave, thank you so much for joining us. What'd you think of the top 25 when it came out this week?
Oh, Stormy, Mike, appreciate y'all having me. Usually I don't really get caught up into it, but it's a good talking point initially. As like you mentioned, we're 2 weeks away from week and a half from week zero, 2.5 from week one. I think they got the top five right for the most part. I mean, I think it's interchangeable. I mean, you could probably make a case Ole Miss should be ranked ahead of Alabama going in. I think Texas's injury with C.J. Baxter at the running back spot hurts him a little bit more, because I think he was in that kind of elite, on that verge of being on that category. There's a lot of good running backs. You win with a lot of good running backs. I think he was on the verge of taking that elite step. Overrated, somebody I didn't like, probably right, Michigan, Ohio, Florida State, probably kind of the two darlings of last year. Probably they lost a lot. Obviously, Michigan now is Roe Moore. You got a new coach there. Florida State lost just a lot of major contributors. They brought in some transfer portal additions, but those guys were kind of like the Roydell Williams, the Malik Benson, the running back and receiver they brought in for Alabama. Were kind of just guys. So I don't know how that translates into actually being, hey, like, we need you to be the superstars, kind of like the Keon Coleman's of last year were. So I think those are two teams that kind of stand out that were probably a little overrated. I think they got the top four, top five right. I mentioned, I think last time I was on there, I'm higher on Tennessee now as we got closer to the year. So I think they should be moved up a little bit, probably a little bit lesser on LSU. But those are probably just the brief synopsis initially when you're looking at it.
Dave, who's the Washington of this year? I mean, I know that it would have to be somebody with a veteran quarterback, an older team. Like, who fits the Washington profile?
I mean, if you factor in schedule, probably a little bit. I'm not a full believer in this. You bring up a good point, Mike, with a veteran quarterback. Probably Missouri. They got so much production back on offense with Brady Cook. Now, they just lost Darius Smith today. Their edge guy was supposed to be replaced Darius Robinson from last year, the Georgia transfer. But if they can get things fixed on all three levels of on defense, they got a new defense coordinator come over from South Alabama. He didn't call it, but I think they have a chance to be decent on defense. But I think with their veteran quarterback, the schedule for me with Missouri is so beneficial. I mean, they're going to cakewalk into the game October 5th at A&M. I mean, they're going to be 4-0 rolling into that unless our guy Bill O'Brien surprises them week three there. So, yeah, September 14th against Boston College. I think if they beat A&M, unless something crazy happens and we have a bunch of 10-2 teams in the SEC, then I think the schedule could start working against them at that point. But I think Missouri sets up pretty well to kind of make that Washington run just because they have so much back. They probably have the best skill guy in the SEC in Luther Burden. I think they would be that Washington in 2024, Mike.
You're getting our producer, Elliot Bowman, very excited, by the way. He is Mizzou made. But I so agree with you with the schedule. This is a team I'm actually very high on, just considering they play in the SEC, but this is the road they get where they avoid Georgia, they avoid Tennessee, they avoid Ole Miss. A lot of it just sets up for them to have an opportunity to contend, oddly enough, for an SEC title, despite all of the talent that they have across this league. I know you said when it comes to the AP poll, you felt like those top teams, they got it right. Typically, the national champion does come out of those top seven preseason college football ranked teams. But I'm curious if there's one of those that you think might just miss the playoff altogether. There's nine teams that are odds on numbers to make the college football playoff. You got Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, Notre Dame, Penn State, Ole Miss. And I guess we could throw Alabama in there as two. They're not odds on, but they're close. Any of those teams that you think could miss the college football playoff altogether?
In that top 10 range, you were saying?
Yeah, in the top, I would say top eight.
Top eight. I was going to probably pick one of those top eight teams, Stormy. I'd probably go with I'd probably go Notre Dame. Let's just say they lose to Texas A&M week one at Kyle Field. I think that would be, I mean, they still got Florida State on the schedule. I think they got a matchup with Louisville at home, just going off the top of my head. They get USC last game of the regular season. They already lost their left tackle for the year in fall camp. I know A&M's kind of salivating in the mouth, talking to some of those guys over there, thinking they got a real shot with Mike Elko having familiar over there. So I think that's a big game for Notre Dame. If Notre Dame wins that game at Kyle Field, I know everybody's fired up about that one. College game day is going to be there. I think it's a big swing game both ways. If Notre Dame wins that, they got a good shot to get to the college football playoffs because I don't see three of their losses really down the stretch at that point. And if they go win that game, they're as good as I think they can be. If they lose, I don't know. That would be an interesting from that standpoint. But I do think if Notre Dame's 10-2, I think we all know the brand. I think they're going to try to get Notre Dame into that playoff. But just in the top seven, top eight, I'd probably say Notre Dame would be a team. I think it misses the playoffs completely from that standpoint.
Dabo Sweeney's taking a different approach to this NIL stuff. What's your feeling on his team this year, and can he crack the top 12?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like what Cade Klubnik does. I think he gets a bad rap at time going back last year. Now, I think that's a conversation. I don't think this is going to happen, Mike, but I think that's kind of a conversation people in college football aren't having and aren't ready to accept. Like, what if Clemson were to beat Georgia week one? Like, what does that mean? Week two, what if Michigan were to beat Texas? Like, those are some of those games, those non-con games we've automatically chalked up, myself included. I'm guilty of it. But it's just conversations from that standpoint. But overall from Clemson, I mean, I think this year, Garrett Riley, they're going to take some of the reins off. Lincoln Riley's little brother, the offensive coordinator, he's in his second year at Clemson. I think he's got a little bit, I think from hearing from some people over there, they're kind of taking the reins back. It's going to be truly kind of his offense, I think, this year. Defensively, he promoted up the analyst within. I think they have some guys, especially on the defensive front. I think they recruited well there. They grabbed a couple kids out of the state of Alabama that were pretty good defensive linemen that will now be juniors, will be third years in that program. I think defensively they're going to be there to have a chance. And I think the ACC is just pretty wide open, similar to the Big 12. So I think Clemson, it wouldn't shock me if Clemson in that play. I actually had Miami winning the ACC. Am I an over-believer in Mario Cristobal as a game day coach? I think on paper, Mike, you're a personnel guy. I'm a personnel guy. I'm going to look at the roster. I'm going to go with Miami. But I think Clemson's sitting there at that number two spot. That's who I think is going to be in the ACC championship game. If I'm not high on anyone in the ACC, I think Florida State takes a step back this year. But Clemson, it would not shock me at all if they're in the college football playoff from the ACC.
I feel like you set that up so well about Miami, though. They have all the tools, but can their coach do what he needs to do on game day to get them there? Miami, by the way, 4-1 odds in the ACC. Florida State, a plus 290 favorite. Clemson sitting there at plus 350. And just to put some odds also to that Notre Dame statement that Dave said, if there were a team potentially to be held out, plus 150 to miss the college football playoff. Dave Shoemate, college football analyst, former college football director, player personnel, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. As you look at some of the games coming up, though, week zero, week one, like I said off the top, we're just 10 days away from getting this thing kicked off here. Are there any games in particular that stand out to you on those early weekend slates? Any teams that could be on upset watch in your perspective either?
Yeah, I mean, week zero, I kind of like – I looked at the line recently. I looked at it last week. I kind of like the week zero game in Ireland, Georgia Tech getting the plus 13.5. I might even like them money line. Again, I keep kind of bringing Florida State. Not a negative. I don't think they're going to be like some 6-6, 5-7. I think they're going to be that 8-4, 9-3 range. I still think they're going to be better than the most rosters in the ACC. But still, I don't think they replace that production. So I think that's one to keep it. All right, plus 11 now is what – plus 11.5 Georgia Tech's getting. I'd load up on Georgia Tech, and they got Haynes King coming back, second year in the program. Buster Faulkner's the OC. Brent Key and them do a good job. So that week zero matchup, that's what I'm fired up for. Week one, obviously, we talked about Notre Dame, Texas A&M. I just think that's a swing game for both teams. Both teams will feel really good leaving that. As we get closer, I like A&M. I think Mike Elko's never fielded a bad defense, even going back to his Bowling Green days. Riley Leonard, the quarterback at Notre Dame, that was Mike Elko's quarterback at Duke last year. So there's a lot of familiarity. I'm excited about that one. Florida, Miami kind of has a WWE loser leave town kind of feel to it. Little Mario Cristobal, mm-hmm. Billy Napier, excited about that one. Under the radar one, this is a team I kind of like that would surprise in the Big 12, is West Virginia, Penn State that week one. I think West Virginia's got a lot of guys back. The Big 12's pretty wide open. I like Utah. They're the most consistent team heading into that program or into that new conference, but it is a new conference. Can Cam Rising even stay healthy for a whole year? I think Garrett Green, the quarterback for West Virginia, under the radar player, they got 75% of their roster production coming back. They improved defensively. They finished in the top half of the Big 12. Schedule's difficult, but they're a team that wouldn't surprise me that is playing in Arlington for the Big 12 title at the end of the year and kind of rounding out that top 10, especially if they were to get a week one win against a team like Penn State, who people are expecting to contend for the Big 10, compete for a playoff spot there. So those would probably be my three week one. Obviously, Georgia Tech, Florida State.
Real quick, Dave, we got about 30 seconds to go here on the show. But, I mean, how good is Drew Aller?
So I'm not a believer in him either. The only thing I'm holding hope – you're right. Like, he gets a lot of almost like publicity of people. It's almost like he's had a good year and he just hasn't the last few years. But I don't even remember the production from the year before. It's almost like people are giving him the benefit of the doubt. I will say – there's someone who – I mean, it feels like James Franklin rolls to a new OC every 2 years. They brought in Kansas's OC, who has been with Lance Leopold, Kansas's coach, when they went out to Buffalo. They've always produced good offenses. So it's Andy Kotelnicki is there now. If he can't get them to be a little – he can't get them to be a little more explosive, I don't know. I don't know what else to do. So I'm leaning – I'm still thinking Penn State's in that 9-3, something like that. But, no, I think Andy Kotelnicki was kind of an X factor of a coordinator spot for the entire season.
Yeah, that juice to the under on their season win total certainly makes sense. Dave, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Dave. Great job, man.
Dave Shoemate, everybody. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There are a lot of, let's call it chaotic, situations in the National Football League this year. Some coaches who I don't like saying are on the hot seat. So maybe the way we can term this, Michael, is coaches that have a lot of pressure to win now. And that's where we're going to shift gears here for today's edition of Lombardi's List, where we typically do a top five. Today's the top five coaches with pressure to win now. We've talked a lot about the Dallas Cowboys and the lame duck status of Mike McCarthy, Michael. So that feels like a very good place to start. Let's talk through McCarthy.
Well, McCarthy's won 36 games in 3 years, but you never know it. I mean, a guy wins 36 games, he'd be getting contract extensions left and right. That's 12 wins a year. But McCarthy lost the worst game he could lose at home against a Green Bay team for what all we think wasn't very good. A Green Bay team that barely beat Carolina. A Green Bay team that lost to Tommy DeVito on the road. A Green Bay team that lost to Tampa Bay at home. So, you know, the team came out in that game. And in fairness to Jerry, the team looked ill-prepared. They looked like they were lethargic. The quarterback played a disastrous game. Right. They made more mistakes and didn't know what to do with. And so all those 36 wins got washed away. You know, there was nothing here. So you can't go in there and say to Mike, you did a great job 3 years. I'm going to reward you. Players would look at you funny. Basically, if you did that, you would be saying to the players, it's your fault. He's a great coach. So Jerry took the opposite approach, not do anything, play for it. Now, here's what happens when you do that. And this is real important for us as a betting market, because if it doesn't go well to start in Cleveland, doesn't go well, come home against New Orleans, right? And wins don't have to be the indicator. Struggling, make when it looks bad, it becomes a problem. Because what happens? A lot of teams need confidence. They need confidence. And usually the best teams get confidence in the second half of the season, right? You get, they, you know, like what happened down the stretch of the Green Bay? They got their confidence. They got their, they got momentum, even though some people don't believe in momentum. They got that. That's important. But when you're in one of these situations like McCarthy's in, and you don't get some momentum early, it's hard.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting conversation topic probably for all these coaches that we're going to talk about on this list, Michael, is the importance of having success early. And I mean, week one, week two, pressure that could be on some of these coaches.
Yeah, let's take Brian Daboll, for example. Six games before the bye week, right? I mean, he's got his feet up on the desk. There's no one, no one that watched Hard Knocks came away thinking that Daboll was humble. No one thought that Daboll was in command. Forget about Joe Shane for a moment. So he's got pressure on him. You know, now the owners put all the pressure on him because he wants the quarterback to play better. Whether that happens or not, I don't know. But he took away the play calling from Mike, from Kafka. He took away from Mike Kafka. So now all of a sudden, you know, he's calling the plays himself, right? Hired a new defense coordinator, signed Brian Burns. I mean, there's expectations there. John Mara came out and said, you know, they know what I expect. And people tell me internally within the organization that the general manager is kind of being a little bit more aloof to the coaches because he wants to evaluate them. So, look, they've got to get off to a fast start. That's why they were so good in 2021. They started fast, beat Tennessee. You know, they had these come from behind win against Jacksonville. Now, it all fell apart in the second half of the season, and that carried over into next year because why? They're not very talented. I mean, you don't win seven games in 38 attempts against the Eagles and the Giants and think you have a talented roster.
Yeah. Great first season for Daboll. Like you said, went from a 4-win team, turned it around to 9. Last year, a big step back. You pay Daniel Jones, and not only does he get hurt, but he's just not very good to begin with. The offensive line struggles. The list goes on and on. But I think just food for thought, as we talk about these coaches, people at home listening or in the car listening, if you think that these coaches can turn things around and are going to win these games early in the season and get their reputation back within the organization, then maybe it's a team that you're targeting for survivor or looking on the opposite side of that. And that's a good reminder too, just in general, if you haven't signed up for a Circa Survivor contest or Circa Millions, you don't have to live in Las Vegas to be a part of these contests. You just got to come down for a day to sign up. And if you're able to sign up with a proxy service, you can do the entire rest of the season through them. And Winner Circle Proxy is the preferred proxy of VSIN. They do an unbelievable job. They're in their 9th year of providing trusted proxy services to the top contest players, including the winners in both Survivor and the Million contest last year. They have a lot of exclusive events, room discounts that are included as well for the Ultimate Contest Weekend coming up at the end of this month, August 22nd to 24th. WinnerCircleProxy.com. Head there now, book your appointment. Again, really, really great opportunity there to be able to play from anywhere in the country. But to get back to some of these coaches, okay, we mentioned Mike McCarthy, Brian Daboll. Let's go to Nick Sirianni now, because the Eagles got off to an unbelievable start last year on paper, 10-1, before things just completely imploded. Then we have the story that comes out last week from Jeremy Fowler and Tim McManus, kind of detailing the internal dysfunction, a quote, fractured and unhealthy relationship between Sirianni and Jalen Hurts, who they signed to a contract last year. Why is Sirianni under so much pressure right now? They won a lot of games. They played in a Super Bowl the year prior. What's going on here?
Well, I think a lot of it is emotion. I mean, I think he's very emotional on game day. I think he doesn't kind of process things through. He doesn't coach the offense. He doesn't coach the defense. He didn't recognize the problem with the team last year when they got out of shape. I mean, their two defensive tackles, Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter, probably gained 100 pounds between the two of them. So the team was out of shape. That's why they were 1-6. The only game they won was against the Giants by 6 points. They couldn't beat anybody down the stretch. They lost to Arizona. Arizona ran the ball on them. If you're not calling plays, if you're not the play caller offensively or defensively, then you're in charge of the conditioning. And that was bad. Now they fired their whole strength and performance coach. They've done everything to make Sirianni successful. We'll see. And when an organization does everything to make a coach successful, it really falls on his plate.
Yeah. New strength and conditioning staff, new set of coordinators with Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio in there. And you mentioned all of those losses that they had down the stretch. How about that ugly wild card round loss, 32-9 to a Baker Mayfield led Bucks team? It wasn't pretty down the stretch. So we'll see if they can get this train back on the tracks. Everybody's favorite head coach, Robert Saleh. Yes, certainly. Pressure for him in year two of Aaron Rodgers. We mentioned this stat earlier. This organization has not had more than 7 wins since 2016. Their win total this year, 10.5. They're expected to make the playoffs and do a whole lot this year. How much pressure is on Saleh?
Yeah, I think there's all the pressure because I think you keep asking this question all the time. And it's really a valid question, and it's a great question. What does success look like for Saleh?
Yeah.
What does that look like? Is it 10 wins at a wild card? Is it 11 wins a division in a conference championship game? You know, what does it look like? Is it a wild card win on the road in Baltimore? You know, you got a 41-year-old quarterback. Is that being successful? I don't know. I think to me, to really judge Robert Saleh, someone has to decide what is successful. Now, I think there's no franchise who is more linked to the election than the Jets, because if Woody has to go back to Ireland to be the ambassador because Trump wins, a lot of people in the Jets are going to breathe a sigh of relief. If Trump loses, a lot of people in the Jets are going to be in trouble.
That's an interesting perspective. It's been a mess for the Jets for a while. Longest active playoff drought in U.S. professional sports right now. 13 straight years. We'll see what they're able to do this season. Closing things out with a coach that I would say, Michael, I don't think it has been on a ton of people's radar from this standpoint. Doug Peterson with the Jacksonville Jaguars. He takes over after all of the madness that was the Urban Meyer situation. Felt like he finally got the most out of Trevor Lawrence. Last year, still a 9-8 season. But when you start the season 8-3 and only win one the rest of the way, that's when things become problematic. Yeah, they did deal with some injuries. Trevor Lawrence obviously had his injuries. But with Doug Peterson having a lot of pressure, why do you feel that way for him?
Well, because I think they teased everybody with a playoff win against the Rams and then having a great start. I think they want to see results. And this isn't from me. This is from their owner. Read his quote.
Yeah.
At the end of this minicamp, but he has great expectations for this team. He's tired of losing. They're the losingest franchise in the history, right? He's tired of losing. He's tired of signing free agents and then 2 years later cut them. So to me, he's just kind of like, you know, look, I do think there is a Belichickian effect out there, because what you're saying here is, you know, you're going to get to a point where maybe not happen this year, because we know the Super Bowl winning champion Falcons didn't see it this way. But you're going to ask yourself the question, are we better off with Bill or are we better off with someone else? That question is going to get asked a lot in a lot of buildings.
I love that you brought up the Shad Khan of it all, because he did put this staff on notice. He called the back end of last season, quote, organizational failure, said winning now is the expectation. As a staff, they do need to focus more on player development. I think he called it an addiction to free agents. And so signing guys like Trevor Lawrence, re-signing Trevor Lawrence, re-signing Josh Allen, those were big steps that they actually re-signed guys that they drafted highly, because that's something that hasn't really happened for the last decade. 9-8 back-to-back seasons. How many wins? What's the range for them this year, you think?
I think they got to win the North. I think if they don't win the North, and I mean, why shouldn't they win the North? I mean, they got to close the gap. They paid their quarterback. They've got a Super Bowl winning coach. They hired a new defensive staff. I think the results have got to show up.
They were, of course, an odds-on favorite to win the division last year. This year, that is a role that is given to the Texans at plus 105 as a favorite there. We'll be right back. Why Not Wednesday to close out hour two. Don't miss it.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Maybe a stupid one, but I'm just spitballing here.
Can it make you say why not?
That wasn't a stupid question.
It's time for Why Not Wednesday.
I mean, why not?
You know when they say it's so crazy it just might work?
The unfortunate breaking news that we had earlier today regarding Vikings rookie quarterback J.J. McCarthy is that his torn meniscus is going to hold him out for his entire rookie season, Michael, which naturally has people talking about Sam Darnold. And that, well, yes, he was already the presumed starter. If he could make things work in Minnesota, could he be comeback player of the year? The odds have shrunk to 12-1. Could you say why not?
Yeah, I could say why not to that. You get me on that one. I mean, why not? Right? It's one of those where I think he's got a really good quarterback coach. And Kevin O'Connell. They've got really good skill. I think handing the ball off to Aaron Jones is always going to be helpful if he stays healthy. with Jefferson and all the players they have, Addison, Hockenson. Yeah, why not?
So would his adversity be that he had to go see like a Wiccan or a Median or something to stop seeing ghosts? Because you know how they changed the criteria for the award this year, right? So that, in my mind, I already had Sam Darnold kind of axed off because they were trying to encourage voters no longer to bet on guys that either hadn't played or were just performing poorly after Joe Flacco won over DeMar Hamlin last year. They're trying to change the narrative about that. Does that change your philosophy at all with this?
Yeah, I mean, I think they changed it. No, because I think what Darnold would be, to me, Darnold represents comeback player of the year. Had never really had a good year, and now he needs to come back from something.
Okay, we shall see. This next one you're going to love. Could you say why not to Robert Saleh, coach of the year? If he gets through all of this adversity, could he be coach of the year? What do you think?
Oh, that's a good one. No chance. Look, everything that happens good for the Jets will be Aaron Rodgers.
Yes.
Everything that happens bad for the Jets will be Robert Saleh. So no way.
That's what I've been saying constantly, because the fact that his odds have gotten shorter and shorter and that he's among the favorites to win this award, quite frankly, is mind-boggling to me, because he's been the source of a lot of their issues.
Yeah.
And not being able to handle things and not having the leadership.
You can't handle a press conference.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So I think, yes, Aaron Rodgers should win coach of the year if the Jets have a 10-plus win season and make the playoffs. We talked a lot about the Dallas Cowboys today. You have a new article up at VSiN.com detailing the idea and concept of when for Jerry Jones and the Cowboys and all of the contracts. Could you say why not to an alt-under on the Cowboys' season win total, that this lame duck year is not going to motivate this group? They're not going to come close to their season wins. Plus 205 is the price, under 8.5.
Under 8.5. You know, I could go, what's the price? Just 205?
Yes.
Yeah, it's, I don't think that's enough, Stormy.
Okay.
I don't think that's enough of a payday. Do you?
So I guess it depends on how you view the Cowboys right now, because we've talked a lot about how much with Mike McCarthy and the situation that he's in right now, maybe guys aren't going to be motivated quite to the same level. Maybe they're not going to get on board with their head coach as much. But because of the success,
eight wins isn't exactly. Oh, I mean, that's not like we're reaching for the stars here.
Yeah, their win total is 10.5.
Nine wins there in Dallas is going to be is labeled a disaster, right? I mean, that's going to be labeled a disaster.
So how do you feel about their standard win total, 10.5?
I'm definitely playing the under.
Okay, so you think they fall in between that range. Okay, that's fair. That's fair. How about Ja'Marr Chase? He was not on the practice field yesterday for the first time as part of his hold-in. He's been around. He was not. If he does get on the field, though, high expectations for him as one of the top wide receivers in the league. Could you say why not him leading the National Football League in receiving yards this year at 9-1?
Yeah, I mean, his biggest obstacle is Tyreek Hill, but I would say why not to that. 9-1 is a good number. I definitely think I would do that. I think he's got a chance. I'm not saying he's going to. He's got to stay healthy. Got to have a good offensive line. Mims is practicing really well at right tackle. I think that helps him. So, yeah, I think to me he has all the ingredients to be one of those players.
Well, and this has been
he's talented. And I think this, too, for Chase is with Burton on the team. And Burton being an outside receiver, if they put Chase inside like they're talking about doing, it opens up a whole world of opportunity for Chase in terms of down the field, not getting doubled, making more explosive plays. It's a move they needed to make. But Tyler Boyd was in there. He averaged 6 yards per reception in the air. It was just all he was doing was catching it and going down.
Yeah, I remember you making that point on Monday, and it's a very, very valid one when it comes to Ja'Marr Chase. And we've talked a lot about wide receiver. This is the offseason of the wide receiver, all the money they're making, the level of importance and value that's being thrust upon this position as well. That leads into this next Why Not Wednesday question, also about receiving yards. Maybe it is Ja'Marr Chase, if you think why not, that he could have the most receiving yards in the league this year. But could someone break the record for receiving yards in a single season? 1,964.5 is the number. Of course, the Hall of Famer Calvin Johnson did so in 2012 with the Lions. He holds the record. You said Tyreek Hill will be Ja'Marr Chase's biggest competition to have the most this year. But do you think Tyreek, him, or another wideout could reach this number?
Yeah, I do. I think Tyreek was going to get it last year if he doesn't get hurt. Now, those ifs are pretty big ifs, right? We know that. Same thing with Jeff. I mean, but, you know, with Tyreek Hill, his game is so dramatic and so good. I would not be as scared of that at all. I think he would have done it last year, Stormy.
Yeah, if he and Tua Tagovailoa can both stay healthy for a full season, certainly would make sense. He was on track before his injury last year. Cooper Kupp was close in 2021, that Triple Crown season. Then you've got other guys too, Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb. Could one of these stars do it this year or elsewhere? Let's go to the running back position. Could you say why not? To Derrick Henry leading the league in rushing yards this year, 10-1 odds. What do you think?
Yeah. I would go for that. I mean, you got me a lot on why not today. I can say that.
We're so optimistic, Michael. Who are you?
I know. Who am I is right. I definitely see that. I could see them doing that because I think, you know, they're going to give him the ball. They're going to run. They're going to commit to it. And everybody keys on Lamar Jackson. But this big fella, it's hard to get on the ground.
Yeah. Well, Calvin Johnson's record has only stood for the last 12 years. Eric Dickerson's has stood for a long time, 1984 with the Rams. Could you say why not to any player breaking the rushing yard single season record going over 2,105 and a half?
No, I can't. The game's too hard. There's more games. It's too difficult. You know, there's too many substitutions. There's too much situational football. People change the lineups constantly. So for me, I would say no way. We've seen this is we're not at when Eric was running. It was the league was dominated by runners. Yeah. This is not a league dominated by runners. It's dominated by pass catchers out of the backfield, but not runners.
Does it surprise you that this is only 7-1, given how long this record has stood for?
Yeah, I mean, that's another reason not to bet it. That seems like awfully, awfully low,
yeah.
Right? You got to wait till January. You got to pray. I mean, there's so many conditions that you put into the deal. Like, how does this work? Like, you got to, the guy's got to stay healthy. You got to wait to the end of the year. The team's got to be good. They got to play from in front. Because here's the part, too, that no one seems to understand. If you don't play from in front, you're not going to gain yards. If you're behind in games, you know, you're not going to gain yards. You say, well, you know, Joe Mixon's going to have a good year in Houston because he's down there. They're good. Houston was the worst run team in the league last year.
Yeah. Okay, Michael, so we got one no. Can we get no's on back-to-back Why Not Wednesday questions? I think we will. Can you say why not? To Georgia, preseason number one. Missing the college football playoff. You get 4-1. Better plus money odds than anyone else to miss. Could you say why not?
No, I couldn't. I mean, look. Trust me, if Georgia doesn't make it to the top 12 teams, I mean, you think that the election in Georgia is going to be tough? Oh, my God. Don't go down to Georgia, right?
Yep.
Like, seriously, this could be ugly down there. They're going to need armed guards all over the place. So, no chance.
Kirby Smart's trying to be the next Nick Saban, okay? He's not missing the college football playoff in its expanded format. Speaking of the next Nick Saban, Kalen DeBoer, could you say why not? For him to win the Bear Bryant Award, top head coach in college football, 9-1 odds.
Well, I think he does a great job. You know, based on what I think of Jalen Milroe, based on what I think of the team in Alabama, I could say why not to that because I think DeBoer's a good coach. I think DeBoer's really good at keeping players in his program. He took every good player with him from Washington. He made no bones about it. So I could say that for sure.
He's done it every step of the way in his coaching career. Obviously, stepping in some shoes of the best guy to ever do it are going to be tough, but 9-1, year one? I don't see why not. Let me hit you with one more because I already know my answer is heck no. The College Football Playoff Selection Committee ain't doing this again, but could you say why not to the Liberty Flames making the expanded
no
college football?
No, they destroyed it for everybody. Right? They destroyed it for everybody.
That's what I keep saying. Go ahead.
Once in, you know, and what was proven right was keeping Florida State out.
We've had a couple guests that have come on the program that are saying, oh, but Liberty's got the easiest schedule in the country. Again, they're for sure going to go 10-0. How can you hold out an undefeated team? Well, news, flash, we can. And if the selection committee has any sense, they will. Great stuff. 4-1 odds, though, if you disagree with Michael and I and you think that that is a good bet, go for it. Michael and I will stick with our thought that that is a St. Jude's play. Just donate it. Don't even bother with that wager. Michael, awesome show as always, my friend. Thanks so much for this. This was fun. Glad to have you back.
Thank you, Stormy. See you tomorrow.
Yep. Sharp Money coming up next here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll be back tomorrow. Same time, same place.